Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Hey, before we have some serious issues to get to tonight, but well, they're all serious actually. But before we get to the deadly serious issues, the latest from Mark Sanford, the governor of South Carolina. I'm sorry, but I just have to go here for just for a moment. Mark Sanford fessed up today about more visits with the woman he calls his soulmate and other women in his past. He says he's committed to reconciling with his wife, but told the Associated Press of his continued love for the Argentine woman at the center of this firestorm. Apparently over the past couple of days with interviews with the Associated Press, he said he would die, quote, knowing that I had met my soulmate, end quote. And there's more here, but, you know, okay, look, now, come on. This is different. All of a sudden it's different, isn't it? Isn't it different? This is not just a roll in the hay. This is not just some Latin a lover that he's hooked up with down in Argentina. It's his soulmate. I mean, who's going to stand in the... Why are you looking at me, Kathy? Who's going to stand in the way of a man and woman who are soulmates from connecting? I'm serious. I mean, come on. It's one thing. He says he's trying to fall back in love with his wife, Jenny. Huh? Can you say something?
Do you know what I would say to you if I read somewhere in the press that you had found a soulmate with some chick in Venezuela or something, and you were going to try really hard to fall back in love with me?
What would you say?
I can't repeat it on the air. Keith Olbermann said a bad word tonight. Mine would be worse than that.
Yours would be worse. Does yours have some F's and K's in it?
It has all kinds of bilabial fricatives.
Oh, really? Woo! Well, but on the other hand, he says he will die now. Governor Sanford will die knowing that he had met his soulmate. He said he had crossed lines with a handful of other women. Now, is that reductionism right there? A handful? How many women can you hold in your hand? A handful of women. Little women.
You ought to ask Schwarzenegger.
A handful? He crossed lines with a handful of other women during 20 years of marriage. He said, there were a handful of instances where I crossed the lines that I shouldn't have crossed as a married man, but never crossed the ultimate line, end quote. What would that be? Picking out silverware with one of these women or what? He went on to say that his affair with Maria Belen Chapur, whom apparently he met at an open-air dance spot in Uruguay 8 years ago, he said it was more than just sex. Sanford said, quote, this was a whole lot more than a simple affair. This was a love story. A forbidden one, a tragic one, but a love story at the end of the day, end quote. He said, I owe so much to my boys and to the last 20 years with my wife, Jenny, to not try this larger walk of faith, falling back in love with his wife. Well, there you go. You see, when we're talking a roll in the hay or some sort of oral encounter, as with our dearly beloved President Bill Clinton, or some sort of manual excitation, that's one thing. When we're talking about an actual coupling, that's another thing. But when we're talking about soulmates, oh my God! Listen, Governor Mark, here's what you ought to do, pal. Just stop the bleeding and the insanity. Just sit down with Jenny, work things out. Your boys will be okay. How many of you got? 3, 4? They'll figure this out. They really will. Everything's out there for them now. I mean, what are they going to do when they go back to school in about 6 weeks? Your dad is a girlfriend. Yeah, 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 yeah. What do you, I mean, Mark, Gov, or Governor Sanford, or Mr. Your Honor, you've met your soulmate. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. This was God's will. I mean, when you're talking soulmate, aren't you talking God's will? Didn't God set you and Maria, is that her name, Maria? Maria, on a path where your paths would become a path of crossed paths. And, I mean, Mark, you have to sit down with Jenny and the boys and just let them know. Just that, look, Jenny's from New York. She'll be okay. She's not a wilting flower Southern belle. In fact, if I were you, I would get the hell out of town right now, because Jenny is going to wake up one of these mornings here, probably quite soon, and you know, she'll get up and fix herself a cup of coffee and then say, what the, you know, and then pick up the nearest sharp and come looking for you. You know, like Lorena Bobbitt did, maybe, huh? Snip, snip, snip. Listen, Mark, you met your soulmate. Kiss Jenny. Make sure that the alimony and support payments are paid timely and are adequate, more than adequate. Come on now. I mean, this is soulmate stuff. Make sure you get the boys at least a month in the summer and every other Christmas. You know the drill. Come on. We've all been through it, Mark. Just, you know, but don't live the life of a hypocrite now. I mean, you're already a lying son of a bitch who cheated on your wife. You know, you broke a contract. and I'm sure you're married in a church, so now God is going to get really pissed off at you because you said, forsaking all others till death us do part. Didn't you? You are a threat to heterosexual marriage, the sanctity of heterosexual marriage, Mark. So bail out now. Now's the time to do it. You know, just head south of the border, down Mexico. No, keep going until you get to Argentina and, you know, find a nice finca and set up housekeeping with the woman and just live your life. Seriously. Seriously. You know, once you use the magic term, Mark, soulmate, well then, let's not cheapen things by talking about an affair. This is not an affair, Mark. Now, I'm already getting some emails from you cynics. Oh, come on. Have you seen this guy? Honest to God, he looks like a 14-year-old boy asking us to make decisions for him. What an existential crisis he has, huh? Oh, poor me. I have to reconcile with my wife, whom I don't love, and sacrifice my soulmate. What a freaking coward. He can't even face his wife. At least Edwards did that. Oh, yeah, that's right. Edwards is a Democrat. Oh, man. You people are merciless. Ooh, can't read this one. Ow! Oh, my God. I can't read this one.
Can you imagine for the rest of your married life, if you stayed married to this joker, you'd have to listen to, I gave up my soulmate for you. Right. I'm here, aren't I? I'm trying to love you. Who needs that?
That's when the hedge tremors come out, right? Snip, snip, snip. All right. I'm sorry. I just... This is Romeo and Juliet. This is David and Bathsheba. As a matter of fact, I think he made that reference. This is Tristan and Isolde. The Red Queen and Alice. It's something. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Why can't it all be like it was before? How can I explain why mommy's not here anymore? 'Cause daddy likes porno and $10 whores. Daddy gets wasted and robs liquor stores. Drugs. think that's why your mommy.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. You remember last night, if you were listening, I was talking about the comparison between the Nazi use of terror against the Jews of Warsaw and the Warsaw Ghetto in the early 40s, and the Israeli Jews' use of terror in much the same manner against the people of Gaza. Palestinians, and I pissed off a couple of people. Anytime I bring up that issue, I'm going to piss people off. I'm used to it, and it really doesn't bother me, not that much anymore. Got a couple of phone calls. One guy was going to educate me. yeah, that'll happen about that issue. Oh, okay. What is it with so many American Jews that they feel that unless every single American agrees with them, they haven't done their job? That people like me, who is very sympathetic to the idea of a Jewish state, very sympathetic to just about every single issue that the Israelis have come up with since they have forced themselves onto the Palestinian territory, and yet, you know, still feel that the Palestinians were just brutalized. I mean, why is there such an effort made to silence the only voice in talk radio that you're going to hear talking about this stuff from this particular point of view? You're not going to hear anybody else talking about this topic the way I talk about it. It's just not going to happen. And it's not because I am now self-employed. I talked about this when I worked for Air America that was owned by Jews. I work like this when I worked for Nova M that was owned by Jews. So it's not because all of a sudden we have an independent operation here that now I'm stating the case. I've been talking about this for 25 years. What's right is right. What's not right is not right. Period. That's all. It's so damn simple. And the comparisons now are becoming blatant between what happened to European Jewry in the 30s and 40s and what is happening to the Palestinians in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. We don't even have to go back to 1947 and 1948. Let's just, you know, keep it over the past 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, 10. But what is it about so many American Jews that if there is one voice of dissension, in this case, mine, and they happen to hear it, you know, oh, goddamn, I gotta call that guy and set him straight. Oh, I gotta send him an email. Oh, well, he's got his history wrong. Oh, well, I gotta convince him otherwise. Why? You're not gonna convince me otherwise. You don't have to be a professor of ethics at some prestigious university to understand and be able to tell the difference between absolute right and absolute wrong. And over the course of these past 25 years, since the first Intifada, when I started paying attention to what was going on in the Middle East, I've made every effort to present both sides, not both sides, but to condemn, that's a better word, condemn any act of terror, whether it's blowing up a bus in Haifa or blowing up a refugee encampment in the occupied territories. But anyway, when we come back from this break, I want to share with you an email I got from Jan in Mill Valley, California, who is Jewish. And also, I will tell you now, I am going to talk about the story that is nowhere to be found in mainstream media today. Astonishing, isn't it? A Nobel Peace Prize winner and a former U.S. member of Congress, along with 18 or 19 other people, have been hijacked on the goddamn open seas. Hijacked! Taken over by pirates! Who happen to be members of the Israeli Navy, and nobody is talking about it. Nobody. That I'm aware of. I may be wrong. Maybe, I don't watch television today. Maybe Wolf Blitzer devoted one of his 9 hours on television to talk about this. Maybe Hartman talked about it. Maybe, I don't know. But I haven't seen or heard a word about this except what has been handed off to me via the internet. I mean, when the Somali pirates grabbed the U.S. merchant vessel, son of a bitch, that's all we could talk about. There were meetings between Obama and his security advisors, what to do, what to do. And finally, a Navy SEAL did. Bingo, bang, shot him dead. We have a Nobel Peace Prize winner from Ireland and a former U.S. member of Congress among a group of a Jewish filmmaker, too, on board this boat that has now been boarded on the open seas. And the people have been taken hostage. And who's talking about it? Who's talking about it? Hello? Well, by God, I'm going to talk about it.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. Jan in Mill Valley, California writes, he's writing about a caller named Jeff who called in last night and decided he was going to educate me about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. And that didn't go too far. Jan writes, Mike, I'm pleased that you didn't allow Jeff to, quote, educate, end quote, you regarding the Palestinian situation, and sadly I agree with you that there will never be a Palestinian state. That leaves Israel with a few choices. The best choice, but one that will not happen, is to have a binational, democratic, secular state with full rights for everyone. But that is just a dream. That leaves two alternatives: further ethnic cleansing, as began in 1947, or official apartheid. Actually, the so-called generous offer to which Jeff referred would have brought about apartheid. Let me digress for a second. What he's talking about is Clinton and Ehud Barak was the prime minister of Israel at the time. Clinton and what's his name, the Palestinian leader who's now dead, Arafat. When they got together for their meeting, and the conventional wisdom now is that Arafat was offered 97% of the territories that the Palestinians are demanding, and he turned it down, and therefore, screw him. That's the offer that Jan is now writing about. Back to Jan's email. About the generous offer, actually the generous offer to which Jeff referred would have brought about apartheid. What was offered, according to Israel's peace organization, Gush Shalom, was three walled-in Bantustans plus Gaza, with Israel controlling the entrances, the airspace, and indeed everything but self-policing and garbage collection. No self-respecting Palestinian could have accepted that horrible offer. Lately, I have been doing some bedtime reading that makes for a restless night. Israeli professor Ilan Papp has written a definitive book titled The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, based on David Ben-Gurion's diary, as well as the Israeli archives that were declassified in the 1980s. This is a book that everyone, whether Jewish or not, whether a supporter of Israel or not, should read to understand why those who were ethnically cleansed from their lands and homes, who lost everything to Jews, who stole their bank accounts, stole their homes, their belongings, have no great desire to recognize the state of those who destroyed their lives. To me, it would be the same as if Hitler had remained in power and Jews were asked to recognize Germany. What makes it harder for me to read of the massacres, of the forced expulsions, of the destruction of over 500 Palestinian villages, is that not only am I Jewish, but also that one of my relatives, an American Jew who traveled to Palestine in 1947, participated in the ethnic cleansing and was proud of the role he played in, quote, purifying, end quote, Israel for the Jews. This is a book that Jeff should read because he has probably swallowed the lie that the Arab leaders told the people to leave. I'd also like every member of Congress to read this book before they vote billions of our tax dollars to help arm this racist state. But of course, it won't make much difference to those who are afraid of being defeated by AIPAC and the rest of the Israeli lobby. Peace, Jan, and his last name, Mill Valley, California. See, I maintain that for I'm not sure now. I was about to say the vast majority of American Jews. What has happened in Israel, Palestine, is horrific and causes them great pain. But I don't know that because I'm not Jewish and I'm not a member of a temple or a synagogue or and most of my Jewish friends who are not liberal kind of peacenik Jews support the Likudnik point of view. That's why we don't discuss it. I can discuss it with them if I want to lose their friendship, and they mine. So it remains off the table, which is not very easy to deal with. I'm not that type of person. I don't seek confrontation with people about these issues. But an issue like this that is ongoing, and when you have Jewish friends, when you have Palestinian or Arab friends, when you have Lebanese friends, when you have friends who are both Israeli Jews and American Jews, whom you know, you hang out with, the discussion, everybody has to be very careful to avoid that discussion. I don't like it. The statement, "We do not seek a confrontation," must have been in my mind because that was the statement released by the activists aboard the Gaza Justice Boat. All we want is to reach Gaza. We do not seek a confrontation. These people demanded that they be allowed to visit their friends and family in Gaza and deliver their cargo on this boat, the Spirit of Humanity. And if you have gone online and seen a picture of this boat, it looks like, I don't know how someone would get in it and sail from Cyprus to Gaza, but I damn sure wouldn't. Just for fear of the boat sinking. Anyway, they demand that they be allowed to visit their friends and family in Gaza and deliver their cargo. Their cargo was medical supplies, children's toys, reconstruction kits. And the press release came from 60 kilometers off the coast of the Gaza Strip. Human rights activists aboard the Free Gaza ship, the Spirit of Humanity, today demanded that the Israeli Navy immediately stop threatening them. Mairead McGuire, winner of the Nobel Peace Prize and Pachem in Terrace Award for her work in Northern Ireland, said, quote, "This aid is desperately needed by the people of Gaza. President Obama has called upon the Palestinians to abandon violence, but Israel's denying them the right to nonviolently resist the siege of Gaza," end quote. Now, according to the press release, the unarmed justice ship departed Larnaca port in Cyprus, 7:30 a.m. Monday, with its crew of 21 human rights activists, humanitarian workers, and journalists from 11 different countries, including Nobel laureate Mairead McGuire and former U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. The boat, a converted ferry, was to arrive in Gaza this afternoon following a 30-hour sea voyage. At 1:30 a.m., Israeli warships surrounded the small civilian boat and threatened to open fire if they did not turn around. When the activists refused to be intimidated, Israeli occupation forces began jamming their instrumentation, blocking their GPS system, and their navigation systems. This jamming is in direct violation of international maritime law, threatening the welfare and safety of the civilian ship. Responding to this intimidation, former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney declared, quote, I'm extremely angry. We demand that the Israeli government call off their attack dogs. We are unarmed civilians aboard an unarmed boat delivering medical and reconstruction aid to other human beings in Gaza. Why in God's name would Israel want to attack us? End quote. Huwaida Araf, chairperson of the Free Gaza Movement and delegation coordinator for this voyage, said, quote, all we want is to reach Gaza. We want to visit our friends and deliver our cargo of medical supplies, children toys, and reconstruction materials. Our ship was searched and received security clearance from the port authorities in Cyprus before we departed. He added, we do not seek a confrontation. We have traveled from Cypriot waters to international waters and will enter Gazan waters. We've never gone anywhere near Israel. Israel's closure of Gaza is an act of collective punishment and a blatant violation of international law. We call upon our governments to take action to uphold their obligations under the Fourth Geneva Conventions. If they won't, or until they do, we will act. We will come to Gaza again and again until this brutal siege is broken. We invite the good people of the world to join us. This sounds so much like the Jews in the 30s and 40s begging the world to recognize what was going on in Germany. Begging. And of course the world said no. We can't hear you. Sorry, no one's home. Same thing, exactly the same thing. Now, if you want to get some information as this is ongoing, go to freegaza.org. Freegaza.org. And then there's more. This is another press release. This came about 8 hours later. From now 23 miles off the coast of Gaza. Today, Israeli occupation forces attacked and boarded the Free Gaza Movement boat, the Spirit of Humanity, abducting 21 human rights workers from 11 countries, including Nobel laureate Maireen McGuire and former U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. The passengers and crew are being forcibly dragged toward Israel. McKinney, former U.S. Congresswoman, a presidential candidate, said, quote, this is an outrageous violation of international law against us. Our boat was not in Israeli waters, and we were on a human rights mission to the Gaza Strip, end quote. She goes on to say, we're asking the international community to demand our release so we can resume our journey. According to, end of quote, according to an international committee, the Red Cross report released yesterday, the Palestinians living in Gaza are, quote, trapped in despair, end quote. Thousands of Gazans whose homes were destroyed, either during Israel's December-January massacre, are still without shelter, despite pledges of almost $4.5 billion in aid, because Israel refuses to allow cement and other building materials into the Gaza Strip. The Red Cross report also notes that hospitals are struggling to meet the needs of their patients due to Israel's disruption of medical supplies. More when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss?
Peace train sound louder, glide on the peace train.
You nod and smile like a lying stranger when I ask you if you're doing all right. I lose me. And underneath the hungry silence, fear is the...
Be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. So Israel intercepts and seizes, apparently. Now, since this is getting no news coverage to speak of, not in mainstream media. Yeah, CNN had a little blurb. I think maybe Yahoo.com. I'm trying to think. When I talk about mainstream media, I'm not referring to like Bob Kincaid's program or this program. We're not mainstream media. But it's not being covered. So I don't know if Israel has, the Israeli Navy has released this reconditioned ferry boat, for God's sake, that sailed from Cyprus to Gaza or not. But it's a boat carrying medicine, building supplies, and toys attempting to break the siege of Gaza. And you might ask yourself, well, why is there a naval blockade of Gaza? Well, why did the United States put a naval blockade around Nicaragua? Go figure. Back to a spokesperson for the, this is the International Red Cross. No, I'm sorry. Myreed McGuire, the Nobel Peace Prize winner for her work in Northern Ireland, had this to say also. Quote, "The aid we are carrying is a symbol of hope for the people of Gaza, hope that the sea route would open for them and that they would be able to transport their own materials to begin reconstruction or to begin to reconstruct the schools, hospitals, and thousands of homes destroyed during the onslaught of what the Israelis called cast lead." That was that December-January attack against Gaza. She goes on to say, "Our mission is a gesture to the people of Gaza that we stand by them, and that they are not alone," end quote. And just before being kidnapped by Israel, Huwaida Araf, the Free Gaza Movement chairperson and delegation coordinator on this particular voyage, said, quote, "No one could possibly believe that our small boat constitutes any sort of threat to Israel. We carry medical and reconstruction supplies and children's toys." Araf continued, quote, "Israel's deliberate and premeditated attack on our unarmed boat is a clear violation of international law, and we demand our immediate and unconditional release." And again, I don't know if that release has been affected yet or not. But, you know, this is craziness. If this were any other part of the world, now think about this. I don't care what your feelings are about the Middle East. But at least be this honest. If this had happened off the coast of North Korea, if this had happened off the coast of Venezuela, if this had happened off the coast of, South Africa, if it had happened off the coast of Maine, where a ship carrying humanitarian supplies, along with 22 people, and I don't mean to minimize the other people on the boat, but included in the passenger list is a former member of Congress, United States Congress, and presidential candidate, and the Nobel Peace Prize winner from Northern Ireland. Well, how much, and they were, off Somalia. How long do you think it would take before every single news agency and organization in the United States would be on this like white on rice? How long do you think it would take? 30 seconds from the time the press release went out? Or a call for assistance? Or a notification that this ship had been hijacked? But it didn't happen in those places. It happened in international waters off the coast of Gaza. And nobody says anything. What the hell is going on? Is it because Israel, the Israelis, control so much of U.S. media? Could that be? Could it be that every single member of Congress and every single member of our news media are a bunch of goddamn filthy cowards? What are they afraid of? AIPAC? A ship in international waters was hijacked by a bunch of bandits, pirates, dressed as though they were members of the Israeli Navy. 22 people were seized. Do you know what happened to them? I don't. There are a bunch of names here. I've got the passenger list. Some of the names in Arabic names I'm not even going to try to pronounce. From Bahrain, Jordan, Bahrain, Yemen, Bahrain, Bahrain, the United States, United Kingdom, Bahrain. Now we get to the English one, or the ones I can pronounce. Derek Graham from Ireland. He's an electrician, a Free Gaza organizer, the first mate aboard the Spirit of Humanity. Alex Harrison from the UK. He's a solidarity worker from Britain, or she. She is traveling to Gaza to do long-term human rights monitoring. Dennis Healy from the UK. He's the captain of the Spirit of Humanity. This will be his fifth voyage to Gaza. Fifth. Why attack this one? Fatih Jawadi from the UK, a British journalist. Myreed McGuire from Ireland, the Nobel laureate, renowned peace activist. Lubna Massarwa, from Palestine, Israel. She's a Palestinian human rights activist. Teresa McDermott from Scotland. She's traveling to Gaza to do also long-term human rights monitoring. Cynthia McKinney from the United States. Adnan Mormesh from the UK. Also human rights monitor. Adam Kvist from Denmark, human rights monitoring. Adam Shapiro from the United States. He's an American documentary filmmaker and human rights activist. Kathy Sheets from the United States. She's a nurse and filmmaker, traveling to Gaza to do human rights monitoring. And nothing. Nothing. In the United States, we don't talk about this. And it screams the question, why not? Why not? This is an act of piracy. It's an act of war on the open seas. There are people from, 11 countries here that are being held hostage.
How many credit cards?
The hour, or just about. Greg in Wisconsin writes, oh, this is the Molloy program, that's right, sorry, and we've been talking about the attack on this rescue, what do we want to call it, a rescue ship? A relief ship, a ship trying to bring humanitarian aid to the Gazans because they are under siege by the Israelis, a naval embargo in violation of international law. I have noticed, though, regarding the Israelis, that international law is secondary to their activities with the Palestinians. Whatever international law is, it can go screw itself. The Free Gaza ship, the Spirit of Humanity, that's what we've been talking about, and the fact that the Israeli Navy apparently boarded that ship, seized control of that ship, and took it and its 22 passengers, or 21 passengers, hostage, an act of piracy on the open seas. And I've gotten a couple of emails from people who say, well, it's reported at this website and that website. That's not the point. There is no mainstream media reporting of this. It's nowhere on television, is it? It's nowhere. I don't know. Was it on All Things Considered this evening on NPR? It's nowhere. It's like the damn story doesn't exist. 21 human rights activists, including a former U.S. A member of Congress and an Irish Nobel Peace Prize winner, hijacked on the open seas after being threatened with utter and absolute destruction. And you're not going to know about it. Oh, you know about it, but I mean the American public in general, at large, is not going to know about it. Greg in Wisconsin writes, Mike, after days of 24-7 Michael Jackson coverage, you would think mainstream media could at least mention the spirit of humanity. The fact is, it has not been mentioned by any media outlet in this country, which is a clear example of the influence that a certain group has on our media. 40 years ago, the USS Liberty was deliberately attacked by Israel, leaving 34 U.S. sailors dead and 174 wounded, and to this day, virtually no one knows it happened because the U.S. media ignored it. Talking about the war crimes that Israel routinely commits is not anti-Semitism. It is just the truth. Greg in Wisconsin. It's really heartbreaking. You know, living in the South, as I have for the past 45 years, and knowing the history of the South, because of the time I spent working with Look Magazine and yada, 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 some of the most ardent civil rights workers who gave their lives were Jews, to come down here and work for human rights for black folk. They were shot, burned, lynched, cursed. As Irish Dave reminds me in an email here, there was a time when the term here in the South, outside agitator, meant a Jew. And I think about all the work for human rights done in this country by people of the Jewish faith. And now this, what has happened to the Palestinians? Where is the line beyond which reasonableness, rationality, compassion, the truth breaks down completely around this issue? And it's not to be talked about. We're supposed to, No. Don't talk about that. Jesus Christ, Malloy, don't talk about that! Don't go there! No. Don't go there! No, okay, all right, sure. John in Somerset, PA. Now, you're going to make an ass of yourself. You understand that, don't you?
No,
I can't do that. You can only make an ass of yourself. But go ahead and say, Kathy has typed on the screen here what you want to say. When's the last time you heard about suicide Jews? What are you talking about? Let me ask you a question, smart guy. Who invented the car bomb?
Okay, we can stop with the name.
Okay, go away. Get off my radio program. When's the last time you heard of suicide Jews, you goddamn freak? What is that? What is that? Rather than address the issue of how 60 years of, I wonder how much the smart ass had just called in here, how would he feel if somebody who didn't speak his language came to his house and tossed him on the street and his spouse and his children and his mama and his cousins, took his business, took his bank account, and said, "This is my goddamn city." What would he do? This guy who just called me? He'd probably tuck his tail between his legs and slink off into the night. When's the last time I've heard of a suicide Jew? Get real, pal. Don't try that cutesy-ass stuff with me. Don't even try. Man. Really. I mean, absolutely true. Somebody who does not understand this, does not understand this issue, and where the Palestinians are coming from, are the type of people who themselves, if an invading force came to their city, their state, their country, and started kicking ass and blowing stuff up and killing people and forcing evacuations from city after city, village after village, these people would just whimper and whine and slink off into the mountains and say, "Okay, you can have it." I've said before in this program, I can't stand liars, I can't stand sneaks, and I can't stand cowardice. Anything else? Bring it on. But keep that garbage away from me, all right? Take it to somebody who gives a damn. I don't care. I don't want to hear about it. Man. Bob writes that the story is on all the wires. Google.com, FoxNews.com, CNN.com. But that's kind of my point. It's on the wire services. I mean, maybe people aren't aware how much of what we see on television, probably 90% of it that passes as television news, comes from wire services. When I first worked at CNN in the early 80s, that's all we had was wire services. And the story would be developed and made television newsworthy. But first it was reported on the wire services. Of course it's being reported now on the wire services. Then why hasn't ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, on and on and on and on, why haven't they picked it up? Why haven't they put pictures out there? Why haven't they shown this? Why haven't they shown the destruction in Gaza? Why haven't they even talked about the issue? Other than the only thing that television does, every time there is a flare-up in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Druze, or between Lebanon and the Israelis, or Syria, the Israelis bomb Syria, or there's an attack on a Palestinian refugee camp, which is a joke. Refugee camp. 60 years a refugee camp? Please. Or when there is a suicide bombing attack by Palestinians who have been pushed beyond endurance against the Israelis, or missiles are lobbed into illegal settlements. When that happens, then there's some television coverage. You know why? Because television loves the gore and the guts and the blood. But they won't take the time to explain what the issue is.
Out came back. And the anchorman was saying, blah, blah. And I replied, bah, bah. And the anchor woman was saying, blah, blah. And I replied, bah, bah. Then I remembered, then I...
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's about 21 past the hour. One of my emailers here, Mike, why are the Jews of Masada regarded as heroes? I guess your caller didn't hear about that. I can't think that quickly. You know, some smartass calls in and says, when's the last time you heard about suicide Jews? He has no idea about Masada. Wouldn't know it if somebody came up to him and said, hey, listen, there was a time when a bunch of Jews after the first Jewish-Roman war, they took over this fortress on a large mesa in the Judean desert overlooking the Dead Sea. And guess what? Rather than surrender, they all committed suicide. No. We're not going to hear about that. Not from callers who want to ask me, when's the last time you heard of a suicide Jew? God. Well, it's been a while, huh? Here in Atlanta, there is an NBC, the NBC affiliate on television, WXIA, Channel 11. And I just got an email from somebody who sent me a link. They're reporting it on their website. And then it's very quick. One, two, maybe three paragraphs, probably not more than 200 words about this story. And here's some reactions to this story regarding Cynthia McKinney's involvement. Here's one from Good old boy 59, who writes, they can keep her. We don't want her. Accept our apology from Georgia, USA. We don't want her. Her mouth overloads her thinking. A disgrace to all the people of Georgia. They're talking about Cynthia McKinney. And then somebody responds that Devil Chic writes, my thoughts exactly, good old boy. Keep her or push her overboard. Listen to these sons of bitches. Then the next one, Shop Mom 6 writes, as much as I don't like seeing people get hurt, and that goes for McKinney also, I must say that they can keep her and make her one of their wives. LOL. We sure don't want her back here in Georgia. Oh, my God. Here's one from D-Militant, writes, I can't even argue this one. Lock her up and keep her over there. She's a real piece of work. Here's from GOP Mom, writes, trust me, after a few minutes listening to her run her mouth, they will gladly let her go. Here's from Master K9 underscore ATL. I'd pay them to keep her. Heck, I'd even vote for a special tax to fund it. Dusk Till Dawn writes, LOLOL, she's at it again. This is too funny. ROTF. My God. Now, this is Atlanta, Georgia. Ron, Lost in PA, sent this to me. And Ron writes, Mike, you should check out all the Patriots on the WXIA Channel 11 post of the hijacking by the Israeli Navy. They don't have a care for international law and how it affects what happens on the high seas. And their mean-ass comments about Congresswoman McKinney are just astounding. Ron goes on, why do I never get used to the hate and stupidity of these people? How did they ever get so goddamn sick? Their vitriol is a half aphrodisiac and half cowardice masked as racist machismo. If they could get away with it, they'd just kill everyone who disagrees with them, I swear. I'm really over the American point of view. It's just evil, and Israel is our puppet master. P.S. My mother, wife, and son are Jewish. So what does that make me? Well, if your mother was Jewish, it means you are. Man, Here's an email from KW who writes, no one group's hands are clean of it. All of our hands are dirty. Lest Jewish folks think they are not terrorists, they only need to be reminded of the 1946 bombing of the King David Hotel. It just goes on and on. The thing I do not understand, and I do understand it on a certain level, this inclination to not point out the criminal activities of Israel, especially in this country. And I think American Jews understand, probably as well as European Jews understand, you don't have to go very, very deep under the surface of the culture to find anti-Semitism, just like you don't have to go very deep to find racism. And I understand that. I really do. And that's the part that is extremely painful to Jews in this country who absolutely, with no equivocation, want to see the rights of the Palestinian people respected and who understand that Orthodox Jews don't even recognize the state of Israel because Israel cannot be founded unless the Messiah founds it. But that's a whole different thing. That's for the rabbis to debate. Certainly not for a goy cop like me. I'm just doing a radio talk show. But this idea of anti-Semitism just scratch the surface of this country and boom, it pops up and bites you on the ass. Well, I'm not anti-Semitic, and I hope that the people listen to this program or not. We are talking about the policies of a sovereign state and what those policies are doing to another group of people. It's about 25 before the hour. All right, a couple of emails here. First one from Bob. This is from a news report. It doesn't say where. Quote, the Israeli military issued a statement Tuesday saying that the boat had attempted to break a blockade of Gaza and was forced to sail to an Israeli port after ignoring a radio message to stay out of Gaza waters. The statement said Navy personnel boarded the freighter Arion without any shots being fired, and those on board were to be handed over to immigration authorities. Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman Yigal Palmor said Israel was planning to free the crew and passengers. Nobody wants to keep them here, he said. They will be released as soon as they are checked. And, quote, the humanitarian cargo was to be trucked into the Gaza Strip after a security check. And then this is that's from Bob. This is from AK. And AK writes, regarding the Israeli Navy commandeers the Gaza aid buoy, found the story on the AP mobile site, couldn't find it on the main site. This is what it says. The military said those on board would be handed over to immigration authorities on arrival in the southern port of Ashdod, and humanitarian cargo would be trucked into the Gaza Strip after security check. The ship arrived at Ashdod port after nightfall. Well, I don't know. What does that mean? I could test what that means. I could walk into Trust Company Bank here in Georgia tomorrow with a loaded pistol, point at the teller and demand that he or she fill up a bag that I laid on the counter with all the money, or I would kill that person. They could fill up the bag, and by then, of course, the place would be surrounded by SWAT teams, and I would be arrested. I could say to the judge, listen, tell you what, let me take the money back, and I'll give the money back, and here, you can have the damn gun. I don't want it anymore. Would that be acceptable? I mean, the fact that I broke the law, can't that be reconciled by my unbreaking the law? I'll go back and unrob the bank. Can I do that? Can the Israeli government unhijack a ship by forcing it into a port, checking, quote, the passengers, and then releasing them? What if some of these passengers, they all claim to be members of peace organizations, but what if the peace organizations in this country that are run by Arabs are routinely challenged, surveilled by the FBI, the CIA, the DIA, the NSC, God only knows who? How many Arab relief organizations in the United States in the past 8 years have gotten this treatment? Oh, we're sorry. We're breaking the law, but what the hell? Your name is Muhammad. So, what? You're an American citizen? What? You own a store? You do? What? You've been here for how many generations? 4 generations? You don't even have an Arab accent. Why are you sending money to Gaza? This is insanity. I mean, it really, truly is insanity. Ah, Christ. Let me see what else have we got. Well, I'm getting, you know, as expected, I'm getting a lot of, you know, the really sick stuff from people who absolutely would not tolerate someone discussing the Israeli-Palestinian issue from any point of view other than the Likudnik Israeli point of view. Damn you if you do that, and damn you, if, especially if you do it on the radio. What? You didn't get the memo, Malloy? You don't talk about this, not from that point of view, ever. Do you want to keep your job? Do you want advertisers? It's amazing. That's what I cannot understand. No matter how much silence there is about the Israeli government treatment of the Palestinians, no matter how much official silence exists in this country. And it is deafening. Let one voice or two or three squeak out some complaint about the treatment of the Palestinians by the Israelis, and son of a bitch, the avalanche begins. How dare you? How dare you say that? I bet you believe the only good Jew's a dead Jew. What is Mike Malloy? What is that, German? What is it about this issue that any presentation of any aspect of this issue that is not in keeping with the Israeli official point of view is considered to be not just suspect, but damn near treasonous? Well, I've maintained many, many times about different subjects that when people are so willing to attack on an issue like this, it's because they understand fully inside their own head that their position is untenable, that it is immoral, that it is unethical, that is illegal, it is evil. And that's the reason the attack comes so quick, so swiftly, so many times, from so many different directions, to the point where nobody in this country, nobody in positions of real power, not me, I have no power for Christ's sake, but people in real positions of power will not take a stand on this issue, will not, to hell with taking a stand, just presenting both sides. If there are both sides. And look how the national news media just almost wet its collective pants when a couple of weeks ago Obama used the word Palestine rather than Palestinian people, which is the correct term. You're never supposed to say Palestine. You're supposed to say, well, we hope that someday the Palestinian people have a state. That's how it's supposed to be worded. And then everybody can nod their heads and say, yeah, well, you know, that's true. Yeah, okay, that's fine. But Obama said Palestine, and immediately, like ducks on a June bug, right? All of a sudden, quack, 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 quack. Here comes mainstream media. Oh, my God, he said Palestine. Well, that's different. Well, nobody's ever said that before. Well, I haven't heard a president say that since Harry Truman. Oh, my God, what's going on? Well, this is insane. Well, I really didn't hear Harry Truman. Hell, my parents weren't born when Harry Truman was president. But that's what I've heard. Barack Obama said Palestine? He actually said the P word? Oh, my God. See? We told you. You elect somebody whose middle name is Hussein, and look what happens. By the way, where's his goddamn birth certificate? Unbelievable. Astonishing stuff. Corrupt. Immoral, nasty, ugly, painful. Let me ask you something. If you lived somewhere where you had to have a passbook to go from your house to a store, because the store was across an imaginary line drawn by people who had come into your country. If you had to share your passbook, if you had a relative who died in the back of an ambulance because the ambulance driver couldn't provide the right papers to get through that line to get to a hospital, you know, just on and on and on. If you live someplace where there are 1.2 million of you crowded into an area so small that your little section of the world was considered the most densely populated on earth, not someplace in India or China, but right there. And let's say you were denied a passport to travel outside of the enclave that you were forced into. Huh? What would you do? What would you do? Would you sit back on your ass and just say, well, okay. Okay. All right. That's the way it is. I guess I'll just sit here and die and watch my children rot and you know, watch my houses being blown up and bulldozed and, oh, there's a boat coming my way. Oh, good. Who's on the boat? Oh, the Nobel Peace Prize and a U.S. congresswoman. Oh, okay. Yeah. Listen, that's all well and good, but, you know, we need clothing and food and drinking water and medical supplies and, textbooks and, our country back. Sorry. I feel that way, but I really, 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 really do. And again, you know, I always do this, but I can't help it because I spent 2 hours talking with Meir Kahane on the radio all those years ago during the first Intifada when he was trying to explain to me why it was not going to work and why the Palestinians would be utterly and absolutely decimated, destroyed, and ended. And he said, well, Mike, he didn't call me Malloy. He said, of course they feel this way. Of course the Palestinians feel this way. It's their land. They know it's their land. And the Jew comes from Kiev and Brooklyn and London and says, no, it's our land. Of course the Palestinian is going to fight. Of course he's going to die.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Raymond is calling from Denver, listening on Sirius. Raymond, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I just was wondering if you'd want to expand a little bit on the attack by the Israel on the USS Liberty back in, I think,
well, we recently did that, not more than, oh, I don't know, about a month ago, when the anniversary of that attack, it was in 1967, but there was an anniversary, I believe it was back in April or May. It was during the 67 war. So we've covered it thoroughly, and most of the people who listen to this program, I think, know that story.
Okay.
And some have even read the book, The Attack on the USS Liberty, so.
Well, the point that I was wanting to make is it seems like, I mean, we give them huge amounts of foreign aid, and we seem to, I mean, there was not a, there wasn't a response or anything like that. I mean, and yet it was a horrible attack on one of our naval ships. And I just thought I would make light of that because, it sounds like you've had so many callers that are seeming to defend Israel no matter what. So that was my only comment.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. In 1967, of course, and at arguably the height of the so-called Cold War, that, you know, that was only 5 years after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And Israel was an incredibly valuable strategic partner in the Middle East. Most of the Arab states had, because of the U.S. recognition of Israel and because of the one-sidedness that the U.S. displayed in the Middle East, all for the Israelis and zip for the people who had been dispossessed, so many of the Arab states have had gravitated toward the Soviet sphere of influence. That's the reason we have given an enormous amount of money to Egypt. For the longest period of time, the two largest recipients of U.S. foreign aid were Israel and Egypt. And that was to keep Egypt in our sphere of influence. But, in 1967, and I'm not trying to justify anything, The only rationale that I can come up with that regarding the silence in the United States over that attack was the fact that it was just another Cold War incident another situation where scores of people died or were injured, and it just was part of the game. In 1967, we were involved in a massive affront to democracy and freedom and self-governance in Southeast Asia. We had 500,000 troops. I think we were at 500,000 by 1967 in Southeast Asia, slaughtering people left and right. So when the Israelis hit us, the only rationale I can come up with, the U.S. did not want to get involved in the Middle East when it was already involved in Southeast Asia with the murder and mayhem we were committing there. So it was another one of those incidents. And God knows there were hundreds, thousands of them during the so-called Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. It just became statistical anomaly. You know, oh, a boat was hit? Oh, really? Oh, damn. How many of our guys dead? 34, 37? How many injured? 180? Oh, well, what are you going to do, you know? The world it's a rough place. The Israelis were involved in a war themselves. Christ, they were fighting of seven countries. You know, what do you expect? Well, I guess what I expected was a full investigation and the truth, which apparently is not available. So, that's the only rationale for the silence. You have to remember the times, the geopolitical times, the half century long struggle between capitalism and communism, between American fascism and Soviet fascism, and how many people in how many nations were burned, destroyed, blown to pieces, ended, how many countries and governments were overthrown and destroyed by both the United States and the Soviet Union, on and on and on. One little incident involving the deaths of 34 U.S. sailors off the coast of Lebanon in 1967. Forget about it. That's the only illogical rationale I can come up with. Steve is calling from Nantic, Massachusetts. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. This is Steve the banker.
Oh, hey, Steve the banker. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Are you still sane?
Oh, I'm on the edge. No, I'm still sane.
Hey, I have to tell you, Steve, in about 15 seconds, I'm going to have to take a break. Okay, good, if you wouldn't mind. As a matter of fact,
I am calling for the Jewish thing, though.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Now, what does it say here? You're a pro-Palestinian Jew.
Well, that's an interesting way of saying it, but, I'm Jewish, and I'm not sure if I would consider myself pro-Palestinian Jew. I am a Jew who is human, and I want a two-state solution because I'm human before I'm anything else.
Well, that's, you know, I wish we could all accept that, but apparently we can't. Hold on, Steve. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back after the break and get the rest of your calls also. Stick around. I know it's a rough topic. It's a rough night. I know a lot of people are getting pissed off, or their feelings hurt, or feelings reinforced, or what have you. That's the way it goes, you know? That's just the way it goes. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. No. It's a Malloy program. A little rough ride tonight, but so what, right? That's the way it goes. Want to welcome live listeners at Green 960 in San Francisco. Well, not live listeners. All the listeners are live, but we are live now in San Francisco. So to the folks listening at Green 960, hi. I don't know how you'll hear the first 2 hours of the program. I guess those are rebroadcast. I'm not sure. But anyway, for listeners who are picking up the program live in San Francisco now, we have been talking about the Israeli commandeering the ship that was heading for Gaza to deliver medical supplies and reconstruction kits. The Spirit of Humanity, it was boarded by the Israeli Navy and forced to go to a southern Israel port, where late reports say the 21 human rights activists on board, including the Nobel Peace Prize winner from Northern Ireland. I keep saying Northern Ireland. I guess I shouldn't. Northern Ireland. Myreed McGuire. And a former member of the U.S. Congress, Cynthia McKinney, along with filmmaker Adam Shapiro and a lot of folks from various countries in the Middle East who were trying to get to Gaza City, I guess, with their cargo. So anyway, that's what we've been talking about for the entire program tonight, pretty much. After a few meandering thoughts about poor old Governor Sanford over in South Carolina. We're coming back to your calls in just a second. Steve, I'm coming to you in just a minute here. There's something else I want to announce, too. They're doing it again. Yes, they are. They're doing it again. AM 1090, our affiliate in Seattle, is holding the 2009 Town Hall Forum, Saturday, August 8th. Title of it is Embracing Change, Moving Forward as the Majority. And those involved will be Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Bill Press, Ron Reagan, me. We will be there for this forum. The panel discussion will be moderated by David Postman, who's a former chief political reporter for the Seattle Times. You can get the tickets are on sale now. And usually these things sell out real quick. Because everybody wants to see Stephanie Miller, and everyone wants to hear Tom Hartman. Press and me and Ron Reagan, take us or leave us. But Stephanie is a big draw for because she is very witty and very funny, and Tom Hartman is a big draw because he's very bright. They usually include Press and Ron Reagan and Mike Malloy for, filler. They don't want to have two people sitting on the stage. You want to have five. So anyway, the tickets are available now. They're on sale. You can go to tickets.showwarecenter. That's S-H-O-W-A-R-E, center. Tickets.showwarecenter.com, because that's where it's going to be held. At the Showware Center in Kent, which is outside of Seattle. So you can go to showwarecenter.com. Or you can go to the AM 1090 website. I'm sure they'll have information there too. But this is for this August 8th. Doors open at 5 p.m., it says here, and the discussion runs from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. There'll probably be at least one pee break in there so that people can take a break. And we'll be talking about this a lot between now and then. It's going to be fun. Hope you're going to be there. That's this August 8th, Saturday night. And you can get all the information you want on this by going to the showwarecenter.com. tickets.showwarecenter.com. tickets.showwarecenter.com. Get a couple, six. Okay? All right, now we were just about to talk with Steve in Natick.
Natick.
Natick, Massachusetts. All right. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay. First, I would love you to come to Boston sometime with the group.
I don't know about the other people, Hartman or Stephanie or Press or Ron Reagan, but I know my program's not carried in Boston. You know, these big so-called liberal cities like Boston, New York, Chicago don't have liberal talk.
I know. I'm going to send you an email on that.
Okay.
It's such a very thick subject.
It is.
And thank God you're dealing with this. One of the reasons why it's allowed to go on, the talk goes on back and forth in the United States the way it does, is because of the incredible ignorance and non-reporting and non-talking about the truth on this issue on almost any level, even within the community. I mean, and you're aware of it. You've mentioned it before. You know, I've heard you talk about it before. I'm Jewish. I grew up, in New York and New Jersey. And one of my friends owns one of the largest Jewish papers in the country. And yet, because I see Palestinians as human beings, I have to get into an incredible amount of heavy, heated discussion with people who I grew up with and who are also Jewish like me. It is so taboo, and the reason why, of course, is because the lies have gone on for so long that it is ingrained in our own community, where we simply cannot, some people cannot allow themselves to believe that they're human, because if they are human, then you're committing a crime.
Right.
And so you can't allow it to be human, just like American Indians weren't human or African Americans weren't human for so long. And also, and you're aware of the legacy of Ash's book, if you read that and see what we've done in the Middle East over and over and over again, including today and tomorrow, we have taken these people's land and we have colonialized it, imperialized it. Look at what we just did to Iraq. They're having an auction for oil.
Yeah.
I mean, who allowed that?
Right.
We've gone backwards now 60 years to World War II, and we are taking their resources again. Who allowed that? It's insanity. The bombing in Gaza is insanity. It's insane. There's a very simple way out of it. I mean, we don't have time now, but it's the truth is the only way to get to it. And the only way to get to it is to continue to talk about it straight out. And no matter what, you know, the 2 second fights are of people who will throw things at, you know, each other and say crazy things about Jews and crazy things about Palestinians. Look, for thousands of years and up to and including today, 80 to 90% of Palestinians and Israelis live together, work together, love each other, intermarry over and over again, and would love to have a two-state solution. Most people on both sides do. There are a few people and a lot of international interests that would like to keep the pot boiling, and unfortunately, means people are going to die.
Steve, hold on again. Let me hold you over one more time, because I got to take this break. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We're going to go back to Steve here one more time. He's calling from Natick, Mass. Steve the banker, you probably know him as. He's called him many times about this horrific economic and credit card crisis that we're dealing with. All right, go ahead, Steve.
Another issue.
Yeah, really.
I wanted to say about the Jewish and Palestinian thing. You know, they've lived there together for centuries and centuries. This modern thing, which basically, you know, everybody says during yelling back and forth, you know, we could always go back. In a modern sense, it really started, believe it or not, with Napoleon, you know, being very interested in Egypt, and which got the English very, very, you know, started their thought processes going. And eventually, of course, the English, you know, and the French are the ones that split up, you know, the Middle East in 1916 during World War One.
Right.
The Sykes-Picot Agreement. And nobody in not one Arab voted on it. And yet, two guys sitting in a at a coffee table actually helped create in 1916 our modern world.
Mm-hmm.
And all those states.
Right.
Jordan and Palestine and Israel and Saudi Arabia and Iraq and
mm-hmm.
All of them. And this was done in a coffee house between a Frenchman and an Englishman.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody in the world voted on it.
Right.
No one.
Right.
And that, and we're dying over that, little cup of coffee.
Isn't colonialism wonderful?
No, it really isn't. And again, as a Jewish American or whatever that means, I'm a human being, and I am so sick and tired. I'm 53 years old. When I was 9 years old, looking at the map in Hebrew school, back then I was sick and tired of hearing about
mm-hmm.
it. I remember plainly the 1968 war when I was very, very young, 67 war, and thinking at the same time, what the hell are we doing in Vietnam?
Right.
And I was really young back then, and here we are, you know, 40-something years later, and we're still killing each other's kids and watching each other blow each other's families up, and it is insane. It is insanity. And the United States, as long as there's a CIA and an FBI, look at all the laws that we break. What Israel did to that ship,
mm-hmm.
The Americans have been doing, the American CIA have been doing, not only to countries all over the world, but to our own people
right.
during the last 8 years. And how many people are still behind bars that we don't even know about
mm-hmm.
for no reason?
Mm-hmm.
And that's on Americans. And so it can go on and on. And I say keep having this show. Keep talking about it. It is important, Mike. Keep doing it.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate you checking in. I really do. Thanks a lot. Okay. All right. Take care. Yeah. Of course, keep talking. That was the thing that I think I'm beginning to question a lot of what Barack Obama is saying. But isn't that what he was saying when he was still a candidate? You know, you got to talk. You can't just, you know, turn your back and just say no. You know, I've got bigger bombs than you do. I've got more tanks. I've got all sorts of weaponry. I can blow you up, so why should I talk to you? Quick email here. This is from L.E. Roth. I'm not going to say the town or the first name. Subject line says, Gaza, etc. Mike, I support your position on Palestine 110%. My father was murdered in Auschwitz, most of my relatives along with him. I didn't end up in Auschwitz. I survived through a series of miracles. Long story, unimportant. Your radio program is a gift from heaven. Best of luck. L.A. Roth. Not from heaven. Not from heaven. This is from Bob in Las Vegas. Mike, since you are on the subject, Israel and Palestine, I thought I would email to register a vote of support for your taking your position. I would like to make 2 points. Israel uses our tanks and gunships and our money to commit genocide against the Palestinian people. And our moron puppet president said they hate us for our freedom when people drive airplanes into our buildings. Take care and enjoy all the hate mail. Bob, subscriber from day one. Thanks, Bob. Speaking of subscribers, have I mentioned yet in the past couple of days about how we would certainly like to have you subscribe to our podcasts? It's under $60 a year, which translates to 25 cents a program. And for those people who think we have a 2-bit radio program, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. So you might want to go to MikeMolloy.com and learn how to become a subscriber. Not learn, but find out how to become a subscriber. Oh, and regarding San Francisco, just got an email from Robert Costa, who is the content producer out there. He said, Mike, after we air your 3rd hour live, the whole show is rebroadcast in its entirety directly afterwards from 9 to midnight here in San Francisco. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Molloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. You know, I wanted to get to the topic we're not going to get to tonight, and that is the news out of Iraq that U.S. troops right on schedule, all 130,000 of them, okay, almost, have decided to pull out of the cities in Iraq. And if you can believe your eyes on the television news reports, the Iraqi people are very happy about that. Back to your calls right now. Kevin is calling from Tampa. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Kevin?
I'm fine. I've been listening to you for about the last couple of months. I've become a big fan, so I just wanted to say hi. And
well, thank you.
I found you through the White Rose Society. I'm actually of Indian descent, and I just wanted to say that, you know, the issue that you raised tonight, the issue about Israel and Palestine, is such an important issue. And it's just that I'm a student here, majoring in economics. I'm a graduate student, and it's just that, you know, every time I raise that issue in my classroom in economics, it's just that, you know, it's been dumbed down. And every time I try to talk to my professors, even the most liberal ones, you know, they just they somehow try to, like, you know, find a way to, like, you know, just sort of numb you down, and, you know, they don't want to talk about it at all. And hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm listening to you.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just that, you know, back home in India.
Do you go to USF?
Yes, I do.
That's where Al Aryan was a professor.
Oh, who's that?
Al Aryan? Palestinian professor?
No, one of my professors is Mr. Philip Porter, who is a very outspoken libertarian. And, you know, I really actually see eye to eye on many libertarian issues, except that I don't accept many of their, like, you know, the social issues that they're concerned about. I don't actually agree with them because, like, you know, I do see a big need for, like, you know, for more action on, like, you know, on social issues. So I don't really see eye to eye on many of the libertarian, I mean, like, you know, many of the social issues.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, as far as, like, you know, the Palestine and Israel is concerned, like, you know, there is a prime minister in UK, Mr. George Galloway,
right,
who's been very much vilified in the US media for actually speaking out on this issue.
Yeah, very familiar with him.
Are you?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I played some audio of Galloway several months ago. We've talked about him on the program. Know exactly who he is. He was recently refused an entry visa into Canada.
He was actually banned from Canada.
Right.
Just
to go and participate in a panel discussion. Yeah. Very familiar with Galloway.
Yeah, and I don't understand why, you know, Mr. Molloy. It's just that because, like, you know, you're the first American person I've actually heard who I've heard actually talking about this issue. Because, like, you know, most of the time when I actually turn on the AM dial, I usually hear, like, you know, right-wing media.
Right.
From Michael Savage to, like, you know, Rush Limbaugh and everybody.
Well, but how are you listening to me? You're not going to hear me on a radio station in Tampa.
Yes, and you know what? This is the most surprising part. I don't understand why. I mean, like, you know, I hear everybody else. I mean, like, you know, I hear from Laura Ingraham to, like, you know, some of the most, like, you know, despicable stuff that,
right,
you know, somebody can actually hear on a radio station, from, like, you know, from, like, you know, killing of babies to, like, you know, God knows whatever else.
Right,
and, but,
right,
the, like, you know, anybody who talks about humanitarian things, I mean, like, you know, they're not even given any airtime on the media. I don't understand why.
Well,
and I've been in this country for the last 3 years, so, I mean, like, you know, it's just... It blows my mind that, you know, anybody who actually promotes, like, you know, humanitarian values, and he talks about, like, you know, anybody who talks about, like, you know, promoting to, like, you know, human values, they're not given any airtime at all. And, mm-hmm, you know, I thought, like, you know, this country was supposed to be that, you know, that promotes, like, you know, democracy and...
No. The United States, for the past century and a half, since the Spanish-American War, has been the major... imperialist country on earth. I mean, it wasn't the Brits. You're from India, so you have firsthand experience with imperialism. But it was not the British. The British Raj goes back to what?
It goes back to, I believe, early 17th century.
Yeah, early,
when Clive Owen actually invaded
the
country.
Right. So Indian people were real familiar with the. Being on the receiving end of imperialism, the United States, the people in this country, other than the fact that when when the Europeans came here, we destroyed an entire population. We have been the aggressor. No one has ever, put us under, the heel of imperialism. We have done it, but the American people, are willfully ignorant of our own history, especially where it concerns foreign policy. I don't know why. I'm not ignorant of it. A lot of people I know are not ignorant of it. But generally speaking, American people are extremely ignorant of not only their own history domestically, but their history where it concerns foreign policy. I think there was a literal conspiracy among media and government and educators in this country over the past half century to keep Americans stupid in order to keep us all on the same page where it concerned that struggle with the Soviet Union that I've talked about many times.
Yes, I've been listening to you. And you know, it's just that, I completely agree with you. Like, you know, anytime you talk about, like, you know, and because I come, like, you know, my whole family is, like, you know, they're kind of extremist on the Hinduism side.
Right.
So I understand what you're talking about. And the thing is, like, you know, I think the U.S. is kind of teaching the rest of the world a very ugly lesson on... as far as, like, you know, on humanitarian values, because, like, you know, Indians, I mean, like, you know, there's been a recent rise in India for, like, you know, Hindu fascism.
Right.
Who are actually kind of learning this lesson from USA, because,
mm-hmm,
like, you know, as far as, like, you know, the rest of the world is concerned, like, you know, we see a very anti-Muslim sentiment in India now,
mm-hmm,
because of what has been going on, and, like, you know, and it has been completely justified because of this. And I wish that there were more people, like, you know, the rest of the world, like, you know, in places like India, who would actually voice this opinion like you have. And they just, like, you know, I don't understand why people don't do this. And I have been, like, you know, I have tried to get involved, but it's just that, like I said, like, you know, anytime you try to voice any opinion that's anti-Israeli or anti-Indian or anything like that, you're just completely dumbed down by the rest of the people. You're completely deemed as, like, you know, anti-patriotic or... something like that. Or, like, you know, if you mention, like, in names of people who actually written about this subject, like, you know, people like Arundhati Roy or Noam Chomsky, immediately you're like, you know, you're kind of like, you know, you're, there's a slasher crossed across your name, and you're kind of like, you know, people, the rest of the people in the room kind of look at you funny. And, you know, I wish that attitude would change, but I guess, like, you know, that's going to take a long time to come.
If it comes at all, I don't know. I think it's very clear that we're moving away from tolerance and understanding, and moving toward fascism. I don't care what the country is.
I completely agree with you. It's just that, you know, I think, like, you know, as being a student of economics, I think, like, you know, the whole theory has been so much buried in a jargon. Like, you know, it's for the average person to understand it. It takes a lot of time, you know. It's just that humanism has been completely stripped off the subject, and now it's been completely buried under mathematics and, like, you know, or complicated, like, you know, mathematical theories. And, like, you know, nobody cares about, like, you know, normal human beings anymore. It's morally, it's mostly about profits and, like, you know, and how to maximize your, like, you know, how to maximize your position in a given position.
Well, you know, your author, Arundhati Roy, who wrote The God of Small Things, I read her as often as I can, which is not often enough. And one of the reasons I read her is because she talks about Hindu fascism. She talks about a Muslim factional attacks against, you know, the religious fighting.
I know, Mr.
And
the
slaughter.
My own family is kind of like that, and, you know, and Miss Arundhati Roy is kind of such a fresh, like, you know, fresh air, like, you know, because
she's an incredible writer. I just wish that more of us Americans were familiar with what she writes, because she may be addressing issues in India, but the larger issues are also covered by how she writes and what she writes about. So, listen, I hope you call again, Kevin. I'm going to move on. Thank you so much for your input.
Thank you so much, Mr. Malloy.
Okay.
It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Okay, take care. The pleasure's all mine, trust me. Where are we here? Wait a second. Lois is calling from Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Lois.
My husband and I are Americans, and we really appreciate your program. I'm calling to support your support for the Palestinians. We have both been concerned.
Hey, Lois, can I get you to hold on? I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me put you on hold for a moment.
Okay.
All right, we have to do this break, then we'll come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Enslaved and debased, remember. Blood and toil and sweat and tears, remember.
It is 10 before the hour, thanks to our usual crew.
Remember.
Ben Birch and Sharon Gordy and Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, Kathy Bay. And we were talking with Lois in Vancouver, B.C. Okay, Lois, where were we? Thanks for holding on. Where were we?
I was calling to support your support for Palestinians. I think someone providing this point of view is extremely important, because Canada is very similar to the U.S., almost no difference in that the Israeli perspective is the one that is provided.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people staunch support for Israel is largely a function of the type of media coverage that is given. If there is a bomb goes into Gaza and kills, as is customary, 50 Palestinians, and then they retaliate with something that kills two Jews, and what we're shown is the Israeli casualties, and nothing ever shown from the other side, so it's quite one-sided. I think that Israelis, I've thought for many years, have become the oppressors they fled.
Well, it is easy to come to that conclusion. I don't mean easy. I'm not trying to be flip with you or anything, but it is. I made the statement, I think, last night that Israeli foreign policy has become extremely fascist, and that there may be a number of reasons for that. They may be justifiable in the minds of the people setting Israeli foreign policy. But the government of the United States has become extremely fascist. There may be reasons for that in the minds of the people setting. You understand? I mean, I can go right down the list of countries. I was just talking to the caller from the student from India. This global move toward a extreme right wing or a neo-fascist or just plain old fascist attitude where it concerns government is scary. As far as the Israelis and the Palestinians are concerned, I think it is time at some point for somebody to declare that, as painful as it is, there is never going to be a Palestinian state. If there were to be a Palestinian state, it would have happened at some point within the past 60 years. And it has not happened, and it will not happen. And as one of my emailers pointed out, it is either going to become an apartheid state, as South Africa was, with all these Palestinian Bantustans set up, or it's going to become a secular country that where one person, one vote, regardless of whether they're Jew or Muslim, Palestinian or Israeli, European or Middle Eastern, it'll become a non-religious state. And I don't think that that's going to happen either, because it would deny Israel's Jewishness, if you understand what I mean.
I certainly do.
Right. So what the Israelis and the Palestinians are left with is this horrific situation. What the rest of the world is left with is a flashpoint that cannot be negotiated. I mean, we've been able to negotiate one way or another with our brand of imperialism up against the Russian brand of imperialism, or the Chinese brand of imperialism, Indian brand of imperialism, whatever. But we can negotiate with everybody, it seems like, except where it concerns this issue of Israel-Palestine. Consequently, it is a flashpoint that will be there probably long after you and I are no longer walking this mortal coil. It's going to continue until eventually some sort of a cataclysmic catastrophe occurs. And it's just so bloody maddening to me. I am not religious, but when you take a look at the Muslims and the Jews, they're all sons of Abraham. And I don't understand this. I've never been able to understand this. I cannot understand this. To be accused of being anti-Semitic is ludicrous, because the Jews and the Arabs are Semites. What am I? I'm, you know, the whole thing is maddening.
Perhaps the term anti-Semitic has come to mean anti-Israeli in that context.
Well, it means anti-Jewish in the United
yes.
States. If you're anti-Semitic, you are someone who has these negative or hateful feelings towards Jews. And you know, my feeling about religion is pretty inclusive. I don't like any religion, so it doesn't make any difference to me what it is. Muslim, Jew, Hindu, Christian, I'm sorry, I just can't go there. But this issue, this horrible, sad, miserable issue of the Middle East, of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and it's just, it's heartbreaking. It is just heartbreaking, and it just goes on. As Steve said, I think it was Steve, and a lot of people have said this, these two people continue to kill each other's children. Wasn't it Golda Meir who suggested that was madness? That it was madness to continue to kill each other's children, and yet they're doing it. So it of course it's not an equal killing As horrifying as that statement sounds, it's a way out of proportion killing. The number of Palestinian dead children, the number of Israeli dead children, but they're still doing it to each other, and it's just maddening. Listen, I got to leave it there. Thanks, Lois. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Damn. Well, it certainly was not the intent to devote the entire program to this tonight, but that's pretty much a fait accompli, right? So tomorrow night we will try to focus on the real issues here in America, whether or not Michael Jackson's children are really his, which apparently they're not. Nor are they Debbie Jackson's. I think his three children were delivered by fairies and elves. And there's going to be a viewing of his body, I understand. His body will lie and say, oh, and his old man was left out of the will, which makes sense to me. His old man is a real bupkis from the word go. What am I talking about? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. Kate reminded me, I didn't say that the other night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you losing?